but
I look at your babies today and I say, gee, I'm sure glad, you know, this can never happen to you, mm-hmm. you know.
No, from these kinds of things would happen, and you bet, was there a way that the family reacted to his, did it upset things, or did people just...
Oh, no, we were just scared. We just run. Uh-huh. The last time that my dad ever, three times I can remember his rage. Once the cat fell in the well, our water. We had a cistern. That was our water. That's what we drank. Cat fell in the cistern. And my dad went on a rage because which one of us left the cistern open? And the second thing was, leaving the cistern open, it could have been the baby that had fallen in, you know. So they had to go and fish off the cat. Of course, the cat was drowned by then. But we still have to drink this water. This is our water to drink. And this is the way he explained it to us. This is the very water that goes into your body that keeps you alive. So you've got to put the cover back on the cistern. It could have been one of the babies, you know. And, he went into a rage that time, and we all got it. Oh, we got it. And then another time... he was fussing with Mama. Oh, she tore up all... She was mad at him. I was maybe six or seven years old. Mm-hmm. She got mad at him. And she started tearing up all of his papers. She tore up all of his railroad shop all of his records, his pay stubs, his letters from Marcel, his pictures from, And my dad came home from the shop. And she was doing it. She was in a rage. She was burning and tearing. Well, she hadn't started to burn them yet, but she was tearing everything up. She went into his trunk. He had a... That's how all these things were preserved all those years. One of my brother's older brother has his all of his papers and the family Bible, which gives us the name of Lovelace, by the way. I don't know what you have on there, but I can legally use either name, because when in migration they changed. Our name wasn't even spelled Loveless originally. It was Lassere. And he grabbed a stack of things away from her. She was into the letters from Marcella and some his army papers and his parents' or grandparents' things. And he grabbed them and he threw them to me and told me to run with them, run. You know. Well, I mean, I grabbed the sack. I think it was an oil... like a raincoat sack, or I don't know what you would call it, but oil sack or something. And I ran. I grabbed them and I ran. I ran off down to the corn patch, through the cornfields, and I hid them. And then I went afterward when my dad said, okay, well, where did you put them? I said, I don't know, Dad. I can't remember. I don't know where I put them. And I really couldn't for a long time. They were lost for weeks. And we were doing the corn, and we found them. I dug a hole, and I buried them. But when I came back, he said to me, oh, where are they? I'm going to take them down and give them to the sheriff to keep for me. And he said, your mother's not responsible anymore. She's just not responsible for anything. And he said, I'm going to take them to the sheriff until I can get them to Alma. Alma was my father's sister. And she's the one I used to play for, the organ. And I said, Dad, I don't know where I put them. I don't know, Daddy. I put them someplace. I can't remember. And the more he beat on me, the more I couldn't remember. But that night, he was shaving with they used those straight razors. And he's looking in the mirror, and all of a sudden, he puts the razor to his throat. And Mama says, Ben, what are you doing? And he's got it, and he's holding it here like this. And here, his eye started twitching. That was usually when he would have a, not a fit. He wasn't a... No, nerves. He just got so nervous that he'd become frustrated. I don't mean he was epileptic or anything, not like that. Uh-huh. He would get so nervous, or his mind, and he'd start yelling. He'd think he was in the war again. This is what I mean. I don't mean my dad was crazy, like schizophrenia or anything like that. Something would set him off. Too much stress or too much pressure, and or usually by noise or some real emotion, some real trauma, and he would become very nervous, and he'd start Bell's palsy, or that's not really, he got over that. The last time he went to the hospital, he came home and he was totally cured. They put him on mild tranquilizers and therapy, and they gave him some psychological counseling, and that was the end. That was about 1942, and the reason he did, or 43, and the reason he did is that the war. He was worried about his sons, and in that Pearl Harbor deal, I lost three cousins on the ship the first day. All three cousins were on that, and these were my dad's sons, or my dad's nephews. They were my first cousins. So then that's when he went to the Veterans Hospital, and they gave him tranquilizers, and they counseled him, and he talked it out. And he was never troubled again. But this one time he put the razor to his throat, and he was like a madman. I mean, not he didn't hurt anybody, but he just stood there. It was like he was paralyzed. And my mother came up behind him, and she said, "Ben, what are you doing?" And he didn't say anything. He didn't answer. And I think she sent Ben, my brother, to go get the sheriff. But he was calm. Never said a word. He just went into a trance. And he went to Fort Worth. He went to Fort Worth, Texas, to a veterans hospital. And when he came back, he was pretty good that from then on. And he never went into those rages again. But he used to talk about the war. And to me, that was, you know, I don't go around anyone now that talks about Vietnam or Korea or the Second World War, because I can imagine the hell they went through. I'm in sympathy with them, and I'll fight for them, but I don't want to talk to them.
Now, when you're growing up, did your mother or your sister or anyone ever talk to you about menstruation?
No. I walked in my sleep when I was a child. And I started my period. I was walking in my sleep, and I was down by the lake. And I woke up, and I had a flour sack nightgown on. I might have been 11 or 12. And there was blood all over me, and I didn't know what to do. I was scared. I didn't know what it was. I had no idea there was a period or anything. I was afraid to go home, and I was down by the lake. Means from where we lived to the lake was about 600 feet. We walked out of the house and across the gully, and then the lake. We were right by the lake. And I didn't know what had happened to me. I was scared to death. I didn't know. I woke up. I stepped on a sticker or something down by the lake, and I woke up, and there I'm in my nightgown. But I walked in my sleep as a child many, many times.
That wasn't the walking in the sleep that
scared you. No, because I used to find myself waking up all the time. In fact, sometimes they'd come out and look for me. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what it was, and I was afraid. I was afraid to tell Mama. I was afraid to go to my sister. I didn't know what to do. And I guess that in the early morning chores, when my dad came down to milk the cows, I just laid down and stayed at the lake. I didn't know what the hell to do. It was summertime. And he saw me, and he asked me, what's the matter, child? And I said, I don't know. I was just walking, and I woke up down here. And he said, he called my mother Mammy. He said, did your mammy ever tell you what happens to girls when they get to be your age? And I said, no, what happens? Will I stop walking in my sleep? He said, well, I think you better go up and have a talk with your mammy. And he didn't get mad or anything. I mean, I guess he knew. But I went, when I went up, I don't know, I was still afraid to tell her. But I think my sister, Viola, told me. She said, oh, well, it's time for you to get the rag. Oh, my God. Nobody hears that but us. I mean, no, but that's how I learned. But I was afraid. I was scared to death to go and tell him. I didn't even know. I never heard the word before. Mm-hmm. I never knew. So.
Now, did anyone ever explain, what was actually having sex with biologically or whatever?
No.
Did they just say,
No.
Every month this is going to happen? Or?
You mean
your sister?
No. I went to, we were always, when something like that happened, or actually we had, Dr. Jernigan, he cut my throat a couple of times and did a few operations. I had my nose broken when I was a baby, and he saved my nose. My dad picked it up and put a clothespin on it and put a cotton sack over it and carried me to the doctor. I think I was four. I was washing dishes with my sister, and we were standing on milk cans on a board across two milk cans, and she was on one side and I was at the other end, and she got mad at me and she reached over to hit me, and I fell and smacked my nose into a milk can, and it broke knocked my baby teeth out, broke my nose, cut it, gashed across, only this was down here then. And that I wore cones, like ice cream cones, celluloid in my nose for a couple of years. And my dad was always, he'd pick us up and either jump on the horse if he could, or get on the wagon, or if he had time, hitch the team. If he didn't, he would run and walk us to the gin, and then at the gin he'd call either the sheriff or the doctor or somebody that had a car, and they'd meet him. But, these were real emergencies, farm emergencies. You had to be dead or dying or really bleeding a lot before they ever took you to a doctor. But I went to old Dr. Jernigan, and I told him and asked him why I was walking in my sleep. And, he asked me, what happens when you walk in your sleep? Or how do you know you're walking in your sleep? And I said, well, because I fall downstairs and because I'm at the lake and because sometimes when I'm walking, I go up to Schultz's place. One time I was on the highway and the cars woke me up. The highway was a couple of miles from our house up. And he gave me some kind of pills at that time that I had to stand behind the old wood stove and take every night when I went to sleep. I don't know what they were, but I went to him and he explained to me about menstruation. He also explained to me how my breasts would start growing, and I was very small. I had no indication really of a breastfeed. But he explained to me. He says, how your mother gets pregnant every month. Well, this man and a woman. And then I was absorbed most of it. I'm 11. What can you absorb? Or 12. But he, in other words, he relieved me of any guilt feelings that I had about having my period, because that, I was afraid. I was scared. I didn't know what had happened. I just didn't know, and I was afraid to go to my mother and father with it, or my sister even, because she was a tyrant even then. She'd whack you and beat on you and demand she was a boss, Poor little thing, taking care of all those kids and those babies and the cooking and the washing. Well, I had to do the washing, help her with the diapers and the clothes, but when we confronted something like this, we went to old Dr. Jernigan, and we'd climb up his stairs up on the second floor of the, he was above the feed and grain store, and he would, lecture, he'd talk to us, and we pretty well got our education from him, because there was some gal in town that my sister was friends with, and my mother was running around with, a young girl, and her name was Cagle. There again, and she had, she got syphilis, BB. Now, we knew about BB because my dad told us about BB, how girls had to be careful and men had to be careful and using, one time we found his prophylactics up on top of the grandfather, and we didn't know what they were, and we blew them up. We thought they were balloons. And, oh, boy, did he really. Yeah, and then he sat us all down, boys and girls alike, and he gave us a lesson about how when a man and a woman are going to be together and they're not sure of each other, or one might have a disease, or the man especially might have a disease that, but we blew them up. We thought they were balloons. But that we didn't know. We knew about BB. That was from the time we were born, I guess, because they were so afraid of that. There were an awful lot of those veterans down there that had venereal diseases. They got them during, these are the early years. The war was over in, 20, 18, 19? Men started, my dad came back in 21. He was in Koblenz, Germany in the occupation army for a long time. He didn't come just straight home from the war. They kept him over there. And today I believe that had when he left the trenches and when he was injured, had they put him in a hospital and then sent him home and treated him, he would have probably avoided all of that, but he stayed in Germany, in Koblenz, in the occupation army for almost 2 years after armistice. So, hence his girlfriend, Marcella. Otherwise, we went to old Dr. Jernigan. We'd just go up there and we'd sit until he'd come and say, "What's the matter, child?" We never dared, you know, knock on his door or approach him unless we just, because he lived up there. We'd just sit on the doorstep and wait, or sit in the front porch until he'd come out and say, "What's the matter?" That's how I learned. And the boys, I think they got all of their sex education from the old doctor.
So, was your family religious at all?
We went to church. Yeah, my dad was more religious than my mother. We went to church. We were made to go to church. Mm-hmm. Yes, they were preachers, and I believe that we were the last generation not to go to church or not to be really religious. Because we were Lutherans at one time, but there was no Lutheran church. Then we went to Methodist church. There was no Catholic church. So we went to whatever revival or tent, you know, with the revivals. But there, in later years, they built a Methodist church there. They had an Assembly of God, and my father went once or twice, and then he forbid us to ever go again. I think only because they were called holy rollers, and they used to talk in tongues and roll on the floor and go into, fits. Mm-hmm. And after the second time, my dad refused to ever let us go again. He told us that if he ever caught us in that church, he'd whip us. So we ended up, going to Methodist church. Oh, Baptist church. I was baptized by the Baptist preacher who came through. He didn't have a church there. He just come through once or twice a year and round up everybody that wanted to be baptized. And I was baptized in the lake. Mm-hmm. But in later years, they built a Methodist church, and my dad, to the day died, belonged to the church and was buried from the church. Mm-hmm. My mother has turned to religion in her old age. Mm-hmm. After about 5 years ago, I guess, she turned to the church. And she, from her letters, each year she gets more and more church inclined. I think this happens to a lot of older people. But my father always went to church, every Sunday, ever, never failed. Shave, you know, like the razor incident, he was shaving to go to church. And he always dressed, shirt, tie, hat, coat. He was always clean. Never, my people were clean. He also floor. I think I had that, inherited that, cleanliness. I can get dirty too. I mean, I can get sloppy, dirty, but we never were allowed to go dirty. Every night we had, maybe 10 of us washed our feet in the same bucket, but we had to wash our feet every night and take a bath once a week. In summer we had the lake, no problem, but that is one thing I remember about my parents. They were very, very clean, and they made us be clean. So,
what prompted you leaving home?
Well, actually, the times I was getting on to 12, 13, developing, and, you know, my dad, my mother took all of us one night. I don't know how she did it, because I woke up in a truck in Oklahoma. I went to sleep in Childress, and I woke up in 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning at a truck stop with music blaring in Oklahoma, and I'd never seen neon lights, and I'd never heard jukebox music, and I woke up in the middle, you know, like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning in the back of the truck, and I said to myself, "My God, I mean, what is this?" But I still, it's a mystery. This must have been in 1938, later part of 38. My mother was going with some man. She had left my father, and she'd moved from the farm to town and taken a house and some of the kids and left some of them out with my dad at the farm. And she went to work for the sewing room. I don't know what they call it. The inn. It was a project that they had during the Depression, where women worked.
like a WPA.
WPA. That's the one. My dad went to work for the WPA, and my mother Well, she left him after the last baby was, or before the last baby was born. No, it was after. She left him. Cold. I think it was more like 37 or 38. 37 probably, because she was working at the sewing room, WPA sewing room, in town. She left him, rented a house in town, and got a job at the sewing room. And he was working, still working the farm. Still, poor soul, hiring himself out for a day's labor, you know. But you could shake hands with him, and that was it. It was an agreement, an oral agreement never to be broken. He said he'd do something, and he shook hands, he'd do it. He borrowed some money, and he shook hands on it, or he said, I'll loan you my bull for your calf or one of your calves. That was it. He was a gentleman. He was, you know, very well liked in Childress and honored. I mean, in this, as being a fair person and an honest person. Anyway, my mother left him after the last girl was born, and I believe she was born in 35 or 36. I don't really know. And she moved in, and she took half of us with her, and she left me out there with him. And I was out there with all the boys, and they're now getting to be 10 and 11, and I'm maybe 12. And some boy in town came out, and he was molesting me, and I told my dad about it, and my dad said, well, I think you better go in and live with your mother. You know, you're getting too old now to be around all these boys. He molested me, but he didn't do anything. But I knew what he was trying to do was wrong. And so I went in with her, and then she, what did I do? Oh, I don't know. My mother wasn't too square then. She wasn't too honorable. She had some guy moved in with her young kid, as young as almost, you know, half her age. And I don't know. It just seemed like she went bad. And I left and went to Oklahoma City with, well, she, first of all, she took us. In the middle of the night. This was shortly. My dad came around, and he was. She had three babies with her, the last three little ones, and then I was there, and my sister, and she was having men coming and going into the house all the time, and then she was bootlegging rot gut whiskey down, and it's forbidden. There's no beer, no alcohol, no whiskey, no cigarettes. It's really what they call the Bible Belt, and. My dad came around a couple of times, and I guess she got scared. And because once he came over with the shotgun, and he heard about her partying, and he came over to get the kids. And I guess, in the way, I woke up one morning, and I'm in Oklahoma, and I have bright lights and neon and jukebox, and I'd never seen neon lights before, and I'd never heard a jukebox. And hell, in Childress, we had little lights strung up, you know, with the bare bulbs, and that was only on a special occasion when they had for example, when Roosevelt was elected. I remember that very well. We went into town by bus, by horse and buggy or wagon, and we came back home by bus. They sent all the families that could come in were sent home by buses for the that was for the election. And then the night that he won the election, then they sent out the buses to bring all the farm people into town and gave us a party. But how my mother got us, all of us kids, into that truck, they must have given us knockout drops or something, sleeping pills or something, because I don't see how she could have done that. You know, it's been a mystery to me all my life how she got us all in that truck and took us a couple of hundred miles and without any of us waking up. So that's how I got to Oklahoma City. The first thing she did was she farmed me out as a servant to a lawyer and his wife who had two little kids and they were expecting one. The first thing she did was she hired me out to them, $2 a week. She took $1.50 and left me $0.50. And I worked for those people as a servant, and then I went to work with another family as a servant.
So when you say as a servant?
Well, that's it. I mean, I washed and I ironed and I cooked and I sewed and I did. Of course, they lived in a house in a nice section, and they had washing machines and they had vacuum cleaners, and I had a room and a radio for the first radio. But I was a servant. I was a housekeeper and a baby. I took care of the babies in the house, and I was 12 and 13 years old, and I ran away. I just said, you know, and I paid $10. I saved my 50 cents a week, and I bought a watch for $2, and then I turned around and sold a watch for $3 to, you know, I mean, I learned how to, I started learning, and then I started, you know, pilfering a coin here and there from the women I worked for, because, oh my God, they worked me to death day and night, and would wake me up in the middle of the night. The babies were crying. I mean, she's sleeping with a little tiny baby at her breast, and she would—they would come and wake me up after she'd breastfed the baby to put the baby back to bed and order, you know, get the other kids up. Or if one was the husband, they were out at a party in the night, and I'd put the kids to sleep, and there was two boys, rowdy little boys, and then the mother-in-law would come over in the daytime when it was supposed to be my free time. And she'd have me up in the closets, up cleaning. She said, you can't sit around. Get up there and wash those cabins. And one day, I said, what the hell is this? They're working me to death, and I'm getting 50 cents a week. And 5 or 7 cents of that, I bought a package of cigarettes, and I took the streetcar into town for another 7 cents transfer round trip, and I went to a movie for 10 cents. And I had nothing left. And I, you know, but it didn't take me long to realize that those people were working me to death. So she'd give me 50 cents to go to the market to buy some bread and milk and whatever. And I'd shop for the cheapest, and I'd say, can you give me a break on this? It's a day old. And then, you know, I would pilfer that dime. I'd buy day-old bread, not telling her, but I would pilfer the dime I saved. It wasn't really stealing. It was, I was saving that money. And or she'd ask me to get go get a can of beans or go get a can of something, and I'd pick the very cheapest can I could find. And then I would tell her, well, this is what it costs, mm-hmm. you know. So in a matter of 3 months, I was gone. Man, I was gone. Oh, then I bootlegged, or I ran whiskey for my mother in Oklahoma City. She went up there to bootleg whiskey, you know. It was, and she'd have me going around to the honky-tonks and peddling it. And they'd, in other words, I'd make the delivery and collect the money. And this... It was, and then I met some very kind, really, a family. I met a man and a woman who took me in, bought me shoes, bought me a skirt, a blouse, and a sweater. They took me with them to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and at 15, oh, and then I worked for them, though. I mean, I took care of their house for them, but they were really nice. An elderly couple. Her name was Eccles, and they took me with them to Fort Sill because he was in the service there. And they got me a job at the post exchange. So that was, they picked me up, literally picked me up off the street, bootlegging whiskey. And they, I knew the probation officer was looking for me. So, because I'd been picked up before for not being in school.